All right. Hello, everyone. I am Brian. I am a food addict, and I'm happy to be sharing. This is, I guess it feels like sort of a long time coming, but in some ways I'm nervous and I'm like, what am I gonna say? No, I have, if you see me looking up, it's because my outline is above here. But yeah, I realize I've been coming to this meeting and I probably won't say anything that I haven't said in a share already, but I'll give it a shot. I guess like so many of us, my journey started when I was a kid, and I in my family life, I was the youngest. I was the low man on the totem pole, and food was a way that I learned to cope. I should say, so I say food addict, and I will address why I say food addict, but I'm a binge eater. I have binge eating disorder, you know, that very much marked, you know, I'd say probably starting from like 10, 11, 12, I can look back and say that I was binging, you know, doing actual binges. I was a chubby kid. I had, you know, I remember having these really embarrassing moments with doctors. I remember shopping for husky size clothes. You know, I had these things that it was an early introduction to body shame for me. And I think there is a part of this that being a boy, being a man, made it something that these were not, as when I was growing up, these were not boy problems. You know, like I also felt alienated because I felt like I had these girl problems, as you know, the culture taught me. And and so there was just this embarrassment and this shame. I had, you know, and I think a lot of what was driving me to food when I was younger, you know, I've done some therapy about this. A lot of what was driving me to food when I was younger was that I had this pressure in my family to be good. And I've kind of landed on this idea that I was like the rodeo clown, where it was both, not the court jester, which I was the court jester too, but the rodeo clown also, where I would throw myself in there to diffuse situations, mainly between my parents, but also between my sister and anyone. And that was my role. And that was, you know, I got to be good and funny and nice and sweet. And anytime I acted out, or got in trouble, those things were put up on this pedestal and kind of like celebrated, where it's like, ah, see, Brian makes mistakes. And of course, you know, that's, you get a little overachiever. You get someone who, was, you know, in my own head about that for a long time. So yeah, I guess when I was 16, or 15, I was just like, you know what? Like, I'm fat and I need a girlfriend. So how do you get a girlfriend? You lose weight. And so I lost 40 pounds and I got a girlfriend. And so in my mind, that was this like one-to-one relationship between food, thinness, and then getting the things that I wanted and being the person I wanted to be. You know, gained 50 pounds back over time, broke up with that girlfriend, lost 40 pounds, gained 50 pounds, and then another time lost 40 pounds and gained 50 pounds. And so, you know, I think, yeah, I think that I saw my food pattern as being like very good, bad, black, white. There's like good, thin Brian, bad, fat Brian was very much how I organized things in my head. And I think, you know, that's still a thing I'm pushing back against. So I will skip ahead to how I got here. I'm time is going by quicker than I thought it would. Okay. In sometime in 2021, I heard an episode of a show on the radio, and I will include a link to that later. But it was very much this, like my huge aha moment was it was someone, it was a radio show where one of the segments was talking about binge eating disorder. And I remember I was actually in the kitchen cooking at the time, and I just remember like discovering myself standing in front of my refrigerator, look, my radio was on top of the fridge, looking up at the radio and just being absolutely dumbfounded that someone was describing my most embarrassing, secret, shameful behavior and talking about the things that I do and talking about the thoughts in my head. And in that moment, it was both like this incredible out-of-body recognition, and then also in this same radio show, the idea that this was a women's problem. You know, this was not an issue for me. This was about women having eating disorders. And I was like, oh, damn. Like, but that's exactly me. Like that story is this like Venn diagram that's almost just one circle, you know? And you know, so I took that to therapy. That was great. He was like, you want to have binge eating disorder? Great. You have binge eating disorder. And that was wonderful for me because it was the idea that I wasn't uniquely broken, that I was broken in a way that other people are broken exactly. And I really liked that. And so, yeah, I got to my first OA meeting in person in December 2021. And this was kind of between terrible COVID variants. And so I went to an in-person meeting, and again, I was the only man there, and I was one of maybe three or four people under the age of 40. And so I was again just like, oh man, this is not for me, you know, like this is not my place. Everyone was super nice, and you know, we just kind of went around and read from the 12 and 12, and it was great. I mean, I didn't have any bad experience there. It just felt you know, it was just alienating a little bit. And so, okay, someone from the meeting gives my number to another man, and he's like, he texts me, he's like, I heard you were the only man at a meeting. It happens. And so I start, you know, I'm now in touch with people, start going to men's meetings online, things start to fall into place. I get a sponsor in traditional OA, and then I arrive at step two, which is the one about God. And I don't have religious trauma. I don't have anything against God or religion. I don't think I'm the most powerful entity in the universe, but I don't think the most powerful entity in the universe gives a shit what I eat. So that's the extent of my belief there. And it was really hard. He was someone who, you know, as I was developing this idea of higher powers, he was really not buying it. But in the process of that, I discovered secular, and you know, I've immediately, it really didn't matter that I was in the minority of the gender minority or the sex minority. I was immediately at home here. This was the group of like very smart people who were anxious, who were anti-authority, who everyone was doing their own thing, and still, and some people weren't even doing 12 steps. But everyone was using the framework in their way to find a path to recovery that suited them specifically, and that was immediately what I knew I needed. And so, yeah, this has been my home meeting for probably 2.5 years, maybe longer. I eventually parted ways with my sponsor from the men's meeting and have a sponsor in this meeting, and I am currently doing steps 8 and 9 together. And that's so, you know, that's the progress I've gotten to. So yeah, a couple things of. One of my big topics really is the authority, being anti-authority. I don't, it took me a long time to come up with this identity for myself because I don't feel like that. I feel like I'm nice and I kind of like get along with people. And if you want me to do something and I think it's a good idea, I have no problem doing it and taking orders or whatever. It really just is this thing in my head that I need to create an authority that I can then rebel against. And I've realized that the point that I've gotten to in recovery is that it's always me that is this is a kind of taking it back to step one, but that I am the one who, anytime I've made rules for myself, those are the rules that I can break, because this piece of shit made those rules. Like, who am I to respect me? And so it took a really it's taken and it's still taking a really long time to sort out that there's a relaxing that has to happen, that this isn't about authority, that this is about taking care of myself. And I am getting to that point still. I will say slowly, and it is not a straight line. There are entire months that have been great where I just, my food's been solid, where I have good habits in place, and then I have these slips, and I have these portion fudging, and I have, other addictive behaviors, and I just and so it's not been a straight line at all. But a couple things have been really helpful to me in since being in secular. One of them is went to so this is through Secular Overeaters. I went to one of their panels that was there is an author there, and she introduced the topic of food addiction. And she was saying that, this is a new science, but this it, and so there's not a ton of literature and peer-reviewed research out there now, but you can look at all of the ways that food addiction follows the has all the markers of other kinds of addictions. And that really helped things click for me to say that, I'm not in here because I'm fighting my eating disorder. I'm in here because I'm an addict. And it, again, that was a small hurdle for me to get through, but that get over, but that was that's been really transformative for me to say that I'm an addict. I'm treating addiction. The underlying sources of that addiction are the things that are driving me towards food and my other addictive behaviors. I think that another major theme that I have learned at this meeting is that there's a balance between pushing for change and accepting. Myself, I should say, myself, my behaviors. I know things need to be different. I can't accept things all as they are right now because I'm not being good to myself entirely. Because I'm there are still ways that I feel like my behaviors hurt me. And I am the one who is in charge of driving the car, I should say. There's an amount of control I know I have, there's an amount of control that I know I cannot turn over to a higher power, which is why I'm in the secular meeting. There's an amount of footwork that I have to do, and I can take my wisdom from outside of myself, but I know that I need to be the one. No one else here is in my head when I wake up in the morning, quelling my anxieties. I wish you would, but here we are. And so there is a way that I know things need to change, but I also know I need to accept myself as I am and have a, the Brian is good enough, that mantra be a more daily part of my life. And I will hopefully end. Yeah, I'm doing great. There was a call I had with a friend recently where she was talking about just her own, she's not even in an addictive lens, her own behavioral stuff, and just how for her also she's a nurse, and some of the science is like it helps her
Not
to
5
get the
minutes.
science. Oh, thank you. it helps her to get the science in her head and then kind of work backwards from there. And so it was this idea that, you know, we have in these addictions, in any of our habitual addictive behaviors, we have these neural pathways in our brain that it's like walking through the woods and creating your own path through the woods, and you tamp it down, and then over years that becomes the easiest path to walk. And so what we are doing in trying to change your behavior is literally forge a new pathway and tamp that new pathway down enough so that it becomes as easy or as familiar as the old pathways. And that is uncomfortable. It is inherently difficult and uncomfortable, and it's not ever going to be as easy or inviting as the thing we already know how to do, even if we don't like where that path leads. And so she used this metaphor that I've, you know, this is just a couple weeks ago, but this has really still been rocking my world. But I'm right-handed, and she said, it's like trying to write with your left hand, where you know how to write with your right hand. Everything about that is the more comfortable, familiar way for you to communicate, for you to do everything, but you need to write with your left hand. And it's not going to be good. It's not going to be neat. It's going to be awkward. It's going to be hard. And it's just every day when that urge to write with your right hand comes, it's the willingness to write with your left hand. And so for obviously lefties, it's your opposite hand, I should say. But that's been really helping me. And I think that's all I'll have for now. I'll share a link to the radio story later because I've since listened to it a bunch of times and I can still hear what I heard in it, for good and bad. And it's part of a great story show that probably most of you listen to anyway. And if sometimes we do this, we don't. But if I may propose a topic, I would love to hear what everyone thinks. Just very generally, authority. And however you interpret that, because I feel like that's just thematic for me this week.